My name is Corrine Krause, and I'm beginning the first oral history interview for a research study on the changing role of women. We plan to study change in the lives of Jewish and Italian women in the Pittsburgh area over three generations. Minnie Sussman has volunteered to tape her history as the first in this study. We shall also interview Minnie's mother and her daughter-in-law. The experience of this family will be preserved on tape and will provide data that will be collated with data gathered from many other oral histories to provide an integrated picture of the history of Pittsburgh women in two ethnic groups over most of the 20th century. Minnie, I remember you from the days when you taught me at Rodef Sholem Temple. I also know about your law school career and the many wonderful things you've done in our community, both as a professional and as a volunteer. But now, to make this oral history easier to follow, I'd appreciate it if you would go back to your childhood and, beginning with the vital statistics, tell us about your early life.
Well, mother and dad met and married in Pittsburgh. Dad had come over from Russia with his father and his brother and sister-in-law, and I believe a couple of nieces. Mother had come over from Lithuania. She was about 14 or 15 when she came over. She came originally to a brother who lived in Chicago, a brother whom we called Uncle Mike, who was married to a very, very rigid kind of a woman. Very, very pious and very demanding, although Mother never says anything ill about her, but for Mother to feel that she had to leave Chicago to come to a brother living in Pittsburgh was rather unusual.
When was that?
Let's see, Mother must have come here to Pittsburgh. She and Dad were married in 1904, and Mother must have come here in 1902. 1903, something like that, and Dad probably around 1901 or 1902. They met in the factory. I mean, that most of the Eastern European immigrants worked in rolling stogies.
Yes, I'd heard that.
And they were married then on March the 7th, 1904, and that was the date of my father's birthday. And my sister was born on December 18th, 1904. Apparently Mother became pregnant as quickly as my father looked at her. And their lives started out on a very interesting kind of a level. My father was pretty much of an intellectual and a very positive kind of a person. And he was at that time very much of an agnostic. He was pretty much the Russian intellectual, mm-hmm. but very much of an agnostic. My grandfather had, who was a Hasid, wanted Dad to be a rabbi. In fact, my grandfather's rabbi, or Rebbe as they called him, had put the finger on Dad, but Dad rejected all that kind of thing.
There was more change then, a greater degree right. than even today.
But Mother was a very religious person. My mother was, if she could have been a Baptist, and would have been a very pious person. And that's the reason I can't understand why she couldn't be with my aunt, because my mother was very similar in that. Although Mother is different in one way. Mother is pious for herself, but she does never, never pass judgment on other people.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, and I'm particularly interested in your view of your mother, because when we speak to her, it will be interesting to hear how she viewed herself in comparison.
When they were married, it was their understanding. My father was accepting the fact that Mother was very religiously oriented. And she was going to go to temple, and he would say to the synagogue, and he would say absolutely nothing about it. He could do what he felt about religion. She would do what she wished. They had been married in March, and here came the high holidays in September, and my mother was very, very pregnant. And she got up to get dressed to go to shul in the morning, and to her amazement, there was my father getting dressed to go. And his reason was he did not want any of the women pointing fingers of scorn at mother, that her husband was a non-believer. And he wouldn't expose my mother to that kind of talk. And that's the way their marriage started, and that's the way it continued throughout on this kind of thing, where they worked things up together on that score. Anyhow, I think another interesting incident about their lives was the fact that my father had saved up $100. And they had to buy, so he bought a property on Trent Street.
In Pittsburgh,
down in the hill. It was a double house, and my mother says it. They were the first Jews on the street. You know, it's like we talk now about the first blacks on the street. It was that same kind of approach. They were the first Jews. But my father lost his job because everything had to be done very quickly. And my father would be the ace producer in the shop. But when the stogies would go out, they always had the name of the maker in them. They'd go out, and pretty soon the whole thing would be back, because my father made them so quickly that the filler fell out of them.
Oh.
So my father was without a job, and here they were to be married, and my mother had saved up $30. And how could, I'm almost using my mother's words, how could a man go to a wedding without a new suit or something? So my mother gave him her $30 so that he would come properly dressed.
Oh, what an interesting couple. You must have had an interesting childhood.
I mean, it was, I don't know whether it was interesting. It was a very secure childhood, I guess. Because of the relationship between my father and mother. And I think that my mother was the dominant force behind it. She was, she is a very, very, very bright woman. But one would never realize it until one had spoken to her, because she is one of these very soft-spoken, gentle persons who goes in for non-directional kind of living, never a direct order or something, always sort of in a suggestive way. But in the meantime, there was strength behind that, and you did what my mother wanted you to do without being aware of the fact that my mother was really the one pulling the strings. And it wasn't until my father's death that any of us became aware of the powerhouse that my mother was, because after my father's death, her defenses were weaker, and so that some of this strong control and dominance was there. My father worshipped my mother. He felt that there was no one more beautiful or smarter than my mother. And during the early days of radio, when they'd have all these quiz programs like Information Please, and 20
sure.
Questions, they'd sit there and listen to it so avidly, and my father would always say, "See how smart your mother is? She knows all the answers. She knows the answers before the panel." Well, this is the kind of thing that went on. You can't start to live with a stanky person.
And she really was that
my mother.
She didn't admit the power that she had.
Oh, no. My mother, and another thing about my mother, you were never permitted to say anything ill about anyone. You only could speak good things. And if you got into any kind of a hassle with anybody, and you'd come to Mother and you'd tell her about it, well, are you certain you didn't do something that you perhaps might not have been the cause of it? So it's very, very hard to live up to it. I guess it's a matter of living up to and living with.
The high standards were there all the time.
The high standards were there constantly on all levels. But yet, although the high standards were there, we never felt, at least I never felt, that I was failing in anything. I never felt that I wasn't living up to what was
From what we know of you, you have lived up, more than lived up.
But, I mean, it was this kind of thing. I mean, I wasn't certain about it. Oh, I do remember this. I mean, there were demands made on me. My father and mother had become very active in the community, in the Jewish community of Butler. Let me get this story over, and
sure.
Then we'll go back to the other.
To the movie.
But I remember, you know, we'd have everything centered around the shul. And come holidays, I mean, there was always some kind of a do there. And the children of the religious school put on productions of some kind or another, and the entire community turned out for it. And I remember once, and Mother and Dad frequently would refer to it, when I was called by the superintendent of the religious school, and I was at Mother and Dad. Mother answered the phone, and when I came in, I think it was a Hanukkah or a Purim celebration, something like that, and I was asked to do some kind of a reading, and my mother accepted for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, very angry about it. And I said to them, well, that's all right for you. You're not the one who gets up there with the stomach shaking and the knees shaking.
Okay.
So, I mean, but this was the kind of thing. So there apparently were drives,
okay.
And there were controls and standards that we had to live up to. But as I say, we seemed to have so much freedom of thought and of making our own decisions. At least we appeared to have. I mean, we did. But anyhow, Mother and Dad then. Sarah was born in Pittsburgh. Mother and Dad were married March the 7th, I think, as I said, 1904. And Sarah was born December the 18th, 1904. And then they moved to Butler the following year. And Dad and my mother's brother, and my Uncle Barnett, set up a wholesale tobacco business. But my uncle, that lasted a very short time as a partnership, and my uncle moved back to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Dad continued on, and I guess we were very poor at the time. Dad lost the business, I guess. I don't know too many details about that. I remember them talking about him going out with a horse and buggy to the far reaches of Butler County and environs and being gone for a day or perhaps for a couple days.
To sell his
wholesale stogies and tobacco. Uh-huh. And now, I was born in 1909, and I was born in the building where my father and mother had a general store.
So by the time you were born, they were no longer in the tobacco.
No, and they were in this general store down on East Jefferson Street. Now, there was the Hamilton Bottle Works. There was the Standard Plate Glass in the area. And there's the Pennsylvania Railroad Station right across the street from us. And I don't know what happened then, but I remember then our living down mother and dad left there, and what dad did, I don't know. And I remember we lived down on 3rd Avenue, which was pretty much the Jewish Medina.
Mm-hmm.
This was where there was the greatest concentration of Jews. And then I remember our living in a flat over on Center Avenue in the South Side. And then we came back to East Jefferson Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my younger sister was born. We were all born in the home. Mildred was born in March of 1914. And okay. That's when my father had the same store then.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened in those intervening years, I don't know. And I don't know who was in the store. I remember people by the name of Barch. And they became very good friends of my parents. My parents, I think, bought the store from them. And these people went out to the Midwest and got into the oil business or something. And they still kept up a relationship with my parents. Now, they were Christian. But this, I think, is typical of my mother and father.
Was this new home on Jefferson Street still in a Jewish neighborhood?
No. I mean, there was only one short period down on 3rd Avenue where we lived in a Jewish community. We always lived in a Christian community. Now, on East Jefferson Street, this was primarily a Catholic area. And there were Italian Catholics, there were German Catholics, and then further up the way, there were Irish Catholics. And there was a great deal of division there, by the way. The Italian Catholics went to their school and their church. That was over on the South Side with Father Marinaro.
Mm-hmm.
The German Catholics went to their church and their school with Father Steichner. And then there was the Irish Catholic church and school within just a couple blocks of that, maybe two blocks of the German Catholic. And that was Father Collins that ran it. But there was a real division there.
Yes.
And the Italian synagogue, the Italian church services were in Italian. And at the German Catholic Church, it was in German. And the Irish Catholic, it was Irish. And
who went to public school, Minnie?
The Protestants and the Jews. But you see, the Catholic community was a very small community.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened that where we lived, there was a concentration of Catholics because the Catholic churches were in our area. But the neighbors to the back of us on College Street, no, they were Catholic too. It was further up as you got up into the area called Institute Hill. This is where the Protestants lived. Now, this is the school where we went to up at Institute Hill. And then all the Catholics, though, then went to high school together because they only went through elementary school. They had no secondary school. And when I was about 7 and 8, I knew all of the catechism because I would prompt my friends who were preparing for First Communion on that kind of thing. And at the hall, the Italians referred to my mother as the Madonna.
Oh, my.
Because my mother was a very beautiful and very sweet and soft-spoken person. And at Christmas, of course, mother and dad sold toys in the store. But at Christmas, we would hang stockings because mother and dad didn't want us to feel different.
Even though your mother was so religious.
That's right. But we also observed the holidays, the Hanukkah. But it was when my younger sister was about 4, the mother and dad decided that's enough of this. They've got to be just Jews. And we awakened Christmas morning, and there were the nuts and there were bolts and nails in the stockings. That was our awakening.
Oh,
that no more Christmas for us. But mother and dad would exchange gifts with their neighbors. They always had this kind of very good relationship. And then at Passover, mother would always share Passover with our neighbors. She'd always send over matzahs and wine and the macaroons. So it was that kind of thing that we had. And then as mother and dad began to be more affluent, they moved from living above the store. But here again, the dictates of the store dictated our where we lived. And they had to live somewhere close to the store because of their both being involved in there. And the store, I can recall whether the store was open in the evenings or not. I know it was open Saturday night. I should imagine in the earlier days it must have been open. It must have been a 24-hour-a-day store. And the house that we bought was just one block away from our store. Now, there was another house that the mother wanted very badly. It was about 4 or 5 blocks. Now, if you were my mother, would say, well, I would have liked the house, but I wouldn't say that I wanted it badly. Whatever you have, you do it. And this is the way we were brought up. Mm-hmm. If things were good, children, isn't it nice? But thank God we can have. If things were bad, well, that's a shame, but it could be worse, so we will do without. And we were always involved in the store.
Were you say your mother and your dad both worked in the store?
Oh, yes.
Were you involved also?
When my mother and dad, we always were in the store, because store was part of our lives. And if there was busy, we helped. And this is even when we were very young. And when mother and dad opened up the store on Main Street, we went into the shoe business. My older sister, Sarah, and my brother, who was 18 months younger than I, we ran the store. And I think we were, mother and dad opened the store on Main Street somewhere in the early 20s. So I couldn't have been more than 11 or 12. So Sarah could have only been about 15 or 16 at the time. But when I say they belong, we were always involved in whatever went on. We knew when things were bad. We knew when things were good. And there was this kind of, we weren't involved in any decision making.
But there was
everything was ours. We never heard I or mine in our in our lives. It was always we and our and us. It was that kind of a sharing kind of thing.
That's most interesting. You mentioned a brother, and you mentioned three sisters.
Two sisters. There are the four of us. Now, Sarah was born in 1904 in Pittsburgh. I was born January 2nd, 1909, above the store where we had our dwelling quarters. Eddie was born January, I believe, June 20th. His name was Isidore, and our doctor, Dr. Heilman, said to my mother and father, "You cannot burden that boy with that kind of a name for the rest of his life." So they changed his name to Edward. Eddie was born June 20th, 1910. And Mildred was born March 20th, 1914. We were all born at home. Now, Dr. Wexler, mother didn't use midwives. Dr. B.B. Wexler was the obstetrician here in Pittsburgh with Sarah.
Oh.
And we had Dr. O. Well, mother and dad were that kind of people. They were very progressive and became very much a part of the community. I mean, they didn't believe in looking back. They looked forward.
They sounded very modern.
Oh, they were. Oh, extremely so. And they very quickly became part of the community. Here was Dad, who was certainly anything but religious, but the shul was very with the center of community life. My father was very communally minded, as was my mother. And mother was instrumental, was one, I tell her she started, I was one of them. God forbid that she should take credit.
She shouldn't take credit.
Mother with Mrs. Horowitz and Mrs. Oram, two very beloved friends of my mother's and dad's, started Hadassah and the Council of Jewish Women.
Oh, you do come by this naturally.
Oh, yes. I mean, mother and dad was involved in starting B'nai B'rith in Butler. And then my father also, he and Will Horowitz were the ones who were responsible for the Joint Distribution Committee drive, starting with World War I. And we're very, Dad was very involved in all the drives and all the activities. And he, the non-religious one, was president of the shul for about 15 years on this kind of thing. Mother ventured out into the broader community, and they were building a hospital, and mother was captain of a team, and mother's team raised more money than anyone's else.
Oh, I'm going to ask her about this.
Well, she'll
play her role down.
Oh, yes. She'll just say, well, it's just that I had such wonderful people to work with. I mean, this is the kind of thing. And then also mother, in fact, Sarah and I were talking about to her yesterday or today about the kinds of things that she did. Now, World War I, mother was very involved and took Red Cross classes. Nutrition, first aid kind of things. So that from the very early days, we had an American home in terms of nutrition.
Well, you were
and all
very,
of that.
Yeah, World War I, you were what, 8 years old? And you,
yeah. No, I was younger than that. I was 19. A year or so. But I mean, this. Right. So for, and here was my mother, mother couldn't have been more than, mother couldn't have was in her 20s.
But do you remember the war, I mean, as your, what it meant to you as a little girl, your family?
Yeah, I remember the war savings stamps. We bought war savings stamps. Every day, you know, every week at school they were sold. And I remember a great tragedy. I had turned in a book of stamps, and then you got the large $5 stamp. And I didn't have the book with me, and it was winter, and I lost that $5 stamp between going home from school to the thing, and that was a big thing because, I mean, $5 is $5. And I remember my father becoming very, very angry with me about that. And then I also remember, this was a family joke. I mentioned the fact that we lived across from the railroad station, and Butler had a militia called Company L, and they were called up, and Company L went off to the wars, and the whole community came down to watch them go off to the wars, and the whole area was just jam-packed, and so some of us, the neighborhood children, in order to get a better view, climbed up on a freight car. No trouble climbing up, but I've always had suffered from acrophobia. I had a fear of heights. And finally, one of the brakemen had to come and carry me down.
I was afraid you were going to say the train started.
No, that would have been exciting. But I remember the soldiers. In their uniforms and all of that. And then I remember Armistice Day, the false armistice, and then the real armistice, and all of the excitement. We all went up to Main Street. And the sudden parade and the excitement and the joy. And we had saved the world for democracy.
Oh,
and I also remember Company L being tented up at the old fairgrounds. And this is where they came together, you see, before they went off. So all of those kinds of things. Corinne, you're making me remember
things that
I had totally forgotten.
Well, I
don't know whether I'm happy about this. Whether I'm like the idea of feeling like an ancient.
Not ancient at all, but I think the patriotism that you felt and the feelings for the young man going off to war.
This was the most exciting thing ever happened in Butler. I mean, and all of us were involved. The whole community was involved. And such extreme patriotism. And the whole town was mobilized. This is where the Red Cross started, and my mother was busy with bandages. And she had a uniform. Oh, isn't that funny? I'd forgotten about that. She had a white uniform, and she wore the band that they had, cap that
I've
she
seen
had.
Pictures, certainly.
Oh, sure. I mean, and this was while she was in the store and carrying on all of these kinds of things and activities on this store. And
stop for one moment.
So this, I remember that, the war vividly, and then the schools.
Oh, that's what I wanted to hear about.
We had no kindergartens, of course, and I started to school up at Institute Hill. And I went there for, I think, about only for 2 years, because I became ill. I developed empyema. It's a form of pleurisy. And part of it was, what the cause of it was, I don't know.
You were still a very small child.
I was around six. I was six at the time. And we always sort of connected it with an incident. They were building a bridge across the Conequenessen Creek. And there was just a log to get over it. And there must have been tremendous sibling rivalry between me and my older sister, who was 4 years older than I. And I must have been very, very pesty. And must have made her life a real hell. She, who went with her, was going somewhere with her friends, and I insisted that I go along, and they ran away from me, and I ran after them. And they crossed this log, and I started to cross over, and apparently there had been heavy rains, and the Conequenessen Creek, which is usually just about an inch deep, was really raging. Some of the banks were full, and I fell in. And this too became a laughing kind of a thing. I was rescued by an automobile mechanic who had come down to the garage where he worked, which was situated on the bank of the Conequenessen. And now, whether this is an old wives' tale, apparently if you go down for the third time in swimming,
that's
it's
the
supposed
story.
To be in. Well, I was going down for the third time, and he jumped in his Sunday clothes, rescued me, brought me back to our little store, which was just, you know, up one block and over. And my parents gave him a stogie for giving some cigars as a reward for rescuing me. And I was scolded and punished. By the way, my parents also believed in punishment.
They didn't show their relief until later.
That's true. My mother and father were not sparing of spankings. But yet, it's a funny thing. We don't look back on it with any animus, with any rancor. Because when we punished, there was usually for a very good reason. I was punished for stealing, for taking money out of my mother's purse, or for taking fruit baby at a friend's house and taking a banana without permission.
Mm-hmm.
This was stealing, and we were punished for that kind of thing. We were also punished for lying. And my mother and dad had a, I don't know, they were always able to tell. We were never, none of us are good liars to this day.
They were pretty sure.
The fear of God out of my parents was put into us about lying being so simple and such a terrible thing. And that you always must stand up and admit the truth regardless of the consequences. You take the punishment. That's kind of thing. So anyhow, whether it was from this oil that I might have swallowed or something, I developed this empyema. It was around the high holidays. And Mother was getting ready to go to shul. Dad had already gone. I don't know where the rest of the family, the children were. Mildred was already born, but I don't remember her, and I don't remember Eddie or Sarah in this situation. But I became terribly sick. And Mother called the doctor, and she never did get the holiday down to shul. And I was very, very sick, and he had to operate on the kitchen table. And there was an injection of a little rubber pipe for the release of the, to get rid of the pus or something.
Oh,
we did have a nurse. I remember the nurse. Then after I recovered, and I remember the recovery period, I was very small.
Was this a long illness?
It must have been. I missed a year of school. I was had to be in a baby carriage. Out in front of the store, and I remember the humiliation. Here I was, 6 or 7, in a baby carriage. And then some of the pus apparently wasn't totally gone, and I went down to my ankle, and that's when I was brought into the West Penn Hospital, and I had to have surgery on my ankle. And I came in with my mother, I remember that, and then my father, we had to come in on the trolley, there was the Harmony Short Line. And then my father came to see me, and I funny things you remember. And I remember being so irritated with both parents. I mean, they came in separately because they both said the same thing. They brought me fruit and candy and stuff. But I only had a little bit because the other children in the ward had to have some, because it wouldn't be right for me to have things and with these other children looking and not having anything.
And your parents really taught the lessons all along the way.
Oh yes, oh yes. It wasn't just speaking, it was the actual doing. So anyhow, apparently they decided that I shouldn't go back up to Institute Hill, whether the hill was too steep for my way to walk or something. And for me to go to Jefferson Street School. And I think I went to Jefferson Street School when I was in the third grade. I remember the first grade. I guess it was the second grade that was really eliminated mm-hmm. for me. And I went there, and then I went to McCain Street School for, I think it was supposed to be the fifth and sixth grade. Now, I had been double promoted, or skipped as we called it, in Butler. And there were very serious gaps in my education. I cannot add or subtract. You can pick up in English, you can pick up in history, but you cannot ever make up for the loss of the drill. I learned the concepts.
But you still missed that.
But I never really learned it. I mean, I happen to be a quick study.
Yeah,
so
I'm
I would learn
surprised.
It, and then, you know, after it was over, I'd forget about it as quickly as I learned it. And since there wasn't the kind of drill that I would have had as a constant,
mm-hmm.
at least this is the way I figure for my total incompetency in the field of math.
That must be a characteristic you inherit from your mother.
What?
A remark what? Like that. You're totally incompetent.
Well, it's true. I mean, this kind of thing. And then I went to junior high school, and I skipped the seventh grade in junior high school, too. Even though they need room, so they take up.
Oh, I doubt if that was the reason. Did your parents have high expectations for you at school?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, sure. I mean, I was never scolded for I don't remember ever being scolded for a poor grade.
Do you remember their reaction when you skipped?
Oh, such pride. Oh, my, yes. One incident. My mother was the kind who never came around. She never took the part of her children.
Really?
Oh, no. I mean, I remember my brother getting into fights with some of the little boys. You have to fight your own battles. And are you sure you didn't do anything to cause it? Are you sure that you weren't the cause? But one day I came home, I was at McCain Street School, and I had a Mrs. Goddess, a teacher. She was the widow of a truant officer. And she was from the vintage of the 1800s. She was a tall, angular, she was a feminine Ichabod Crane. Real tall and angular, and wore these sweeping, she must have worn about 8 or 9 skirts, you know, sweeping the floor. And there was one day in class, at that time, we did not have the platoon system. It was the self-contained room all the way through. I had this until I was in junior high school.
What was the platoon system?
The platoon system is where you moved different teachers for different subjects.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. You were in one classroom all day.
This was a self-contained, except for a music teacher that would come in. But we had, so I don't know what the subject was, but she was asking questions, and I had to go up and go up. And she smacked me across the arm with a ruler, and I came home crying. It was the first time I'd ever been smacked. I had been punished. I frequently had to be in the cloakroom because I always talk so damn much. I would never keep quiet, so I would have to go into the cloakroom. That was the punishment. But I had never, never been hit. And in those days, you know, they did use the corporal punishment was quite common. But she slunk across my ruler, and I cried. It was shortly before lunch, and I cried all the way home, and there was this big mark on my arm, and my close friend Florence Von Krug, Fussy Von Krug, gorgeous, beautiful blonde. By the way, interestingly enough, all of my friends were primarily Christian, and they were always these beautiful blondes. Oh, I mean, here was I, this little skinny, freckled face, frizzy-haired kid, homely as thin. And but my friends were always the pretty ones.
It's interesting how you pictured yourself.
I mean, I picture they'll show you. It proves it. But anyhow, my mother, who the teacher was always right. Florence had told my mother that he's telling the truth. And my mother goes up to Mrs. Scott to speak to her. And Mrs. Scott told mother that the reason that she had struck me was because I always knew the answers before anyone else, and it had become very irritating to her.
Oh,
so, I mean, that this was the kind of thing.
What did that mean to you? Did it change your behavior in school?
No.
In her class?
No. I mean, I always did what the fact that I had to stand in the cloakroom all the time because I talked too much never stopped me from talking. And the fact that I was struck across, I mean, if I knew the answer, I knew the answer. I mean, and if I got it before someone else, I couldn't change that. I mean, that's the way I was, and I was never a retreating violet. Never. I mean, I was always.
In spite of Mrs. Scott.
in spite of Mrs. Scott, and in spite of my mother, who will always be a lady kind of thing. It didn't take with me. It took with the other three children, Laura. I mean, Sarah and Mildred and Nettie. They're not nearly as obtrusive and as aggressive as I. They're all much more, they're much more my mother's children than I. I'm much more like my father. Although my younger sister tells me that one reason that she thinks she's a social worker, and she's so knowledgeable, she's so perceptive. Mildred says that the reason that she feels that I don't get along with Mother and hadn't gotten along was because Mother and I were so much alike. But Mother was able to conceal it more than I. I mean, we're both very strong, dominant women. Uh-huh. But Mother was able to hide her dominance.
I see.
Now, it could have been that Mother grew up in the kind of generation and the kind of home that I didn't grow up in. Mother could have grown up in the kind of a home that I understood. But I hear so much about from some of the girls today who are so militantly women's lib. And they, in talking with them, they told me that this idea of, well, if you're bright, you have to conceal because men don't like bright girls.